so Nebuchadnezzar was Necho that took Jehoahaz, the first son of Josiah, from the throne, put his second son, and called his name Jehoiakim, and he ruled for 11 years, and he was that wicked one that cut up God's word with the penknife and threw it in the fire. We read all those things about him, and he was very evil. Jehoahaz, his brother that was king before him briefly for those 3 months, was evil. Then after that, Jehoiakim's son, Jehoiachin, that is also called Jeconiah and Coniah, and we read about him. He had a brief reign of 3 months and 10 days, like his uncle Jehoahaz. And so he was the last of the generations of the king sitting on the throne of David and ruling from Jerusalem over the kingdom of Judah as a physical kingdom. And then he was removed from the throne by Nebuchadnezzar and carried away to Babylon, where he remained for the rest of his days. And then Zedekiah becomes king, and we see that he was a younger brother of Jehoiakim, the father of he was the younger brother of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah. So another one of the sons of Josiah. And he's introduced this way in the book of 2 Kings. If we can turn to 2 Kings chapter 24. And 2 Kings 24 is where we start to read about Zedekiah and his reign. Now all these kings after Josiah did evil in the sight of the Lord. That was true of Jehoahaz, then Jehoiakim, and then Jehoiachin, and now also Zedekiah. So all three of Josiah's sons, including this one now, Zedekiah, that we read about, that reigned as kings, all of his sons did evil in the sight of the Lord. And how sad it is to read that, given how righteous Josiah was. But none of his sons followed the Lord. And his grandson Jehoiachin, Jehoiakim's son, also did evil in the sight of the Lord. Though we know he was preserved alive for many, many years in Babylon, we can hope for his sake that he did come to repentance there. We're not told, but during his time as when he was a young man of 18, during his brief reign as king of Judah, he did evil in the sight of the Lord like his fathers had done. And so he was removed from the throne by Nebuchadnezzar, and Zedekiah was made king. He was another one of these ones, like we saw with Johanan, who's referred to as Jehoahaz, or Jehoiakim, who was Elnathan, and then his name was changed by Necho to Jehoiakim. Well, we have this same situation with Zedekiah, who is Mattaniah, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to give him the name of Zedekiah here. So 2 Kings chapter 24, in verse 17, it says, "And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah his father's brother." Whose father's brother? Jehoiachin's. So the one that Nebuchadnezzar has just removed from the throne. So that's referring to Jehoiachin there when he says his father's brother. Because going back to verse 15, Jehoiachin is the subject there. So here it identifies Zedekiah as being Jehoiachin's father's brother. Well, his father was Jehoiakim, so then that would make him Jehoiakim's brother, which goes along with what we read there in 1 Chronicles 3:15. So Zedekiah was another son of Josiah. So it's reverting back a generation, and that's what we point out, that Jehoiachin was the last of the generations. He was a generation forward from Zedekiah. Now, when we get to the account of Zedekiah and his reign that's in the book of 2 Chronicles in chapter 36 and verse 10, it will refer refer to Zedekiah there as his brother, speaking of Jehoiachin. So sometimes the familial relationships are described in more general or looser terms than at other times. We still do that even in our own language, but sometimes we'll read about somebody being the son of another, which does not necessarily mean that he is directly the son of by one generation, father and son, but it can sometimes refer to even a grandson or beyond, a descendant of. Speaking of son, it can be used in that way. Brother can be used in a more general way than when we're thinking of somebody's actual brother, as in they share at least one parent, either as a half-sibling or both parents as a full sibling. So it does not necessarily mean it's a sibling. We have a much more specific relationship given there in 2 Kings chapter 24, verse 17, when it says that that Zedekiah was Jehoiachin's father's brother. I mean, that's very precise. The fact that it says his brother in 2 Chronicles 36, verse 10, would just be using a more general term than the specific one that's in 2 Kings 24. That's in no way a contradiction at all. We have the genealogy there in 1 Chronicles 3:15. We have the specific relationship identified there in 2 Kings 24:17. So that's this Zedekiah that we're reading about here. So this is one of Josiah is the last of his sons that will reign as king of Judah. So that's why Jehoiachin is the last generation. He's the most forward generation. He's a generation beyond Zedekiah. So this is going back a generation to his father's generation, being his father's brother here, Zedekiah. So that's why the prophecy that we spent some time looking at in Jeremiah 22 that is very significant, when it pointed out how Coniah, Jehoiachin, none of his descendants would prosper sitting on David's throne, ruling in Judah, which that would include Christ, one of Jehoiachin's descendants. So Jesus is descended from David, of course, through the royal line down through Josiah, but then which of the three kings that were Josiah's sons that reigned? Well, Jehoiakim, through Jehoiachin, and then we'll see especially the prominence of Jehoiachin's grandson Zerubbabel, that's going to lead the captives back when they return to the land of Israel following the captivity in Babylon. And that's going to be another of Christ's ancestors in the royal line. But Zerubbabel didn't reign as a king when he was in Jerusalem having led the captives back. He was their leader, referred to as their governor, but was not a king. Jesus, of course, is a king on David's throne, but not ruling over a physical kingdom, but over the spiritual kingdom of Israel, which is the Lord's church. So all of that is extremely significant, why we spent a good bit of time on it when we were studying Jehoiachin. But now we go back a generation, looking at another son of Josiah, the last one here, Zedekiah, who is put on the throne of Judah by Nebuchadnezzar, following the same pattern that Necho did when he removed Jehoahaz, the first son of Josiah, from the throne after he was on it for 3 months. Necho wanted his puppet on the throne. The people anointed the next, the first son of Josiah as king when Josiah died. Necho had the one he wanted that would be under his control, which was the next son, so he was physically in a position of power to do that, as the Lord gave him that, as part of the punishment for this wickedness that these ones were doing, these sons of Josiah and all the people. So this was all that was the beginning of the punishment that God was bringing upon them, having their enemies come against them and prevail against them. I mean, when Egypt is able to take someone from the throne, put another one on, give them their name, tell them how much tribute they're going to be paying every year. That's only going to happen as part of God's punishment for them for doing evil. And that's what happened there. So Necho removed one, put his own puppet on the throne, gave him his name, put him under tribute, and dominated him. Well, that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar does now. Jehoiakim dies, and so the people anointed his son, Jehoiachin, to be king. Nebuchadnezzar takes him off the throne and puts Zedekiah on the throne. And so 2 Kings 24:17 says, "And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's brother, king in his stead, and changed his name to Zedekiah." So like Necho had changed, gave Elnathan the name of Jehoiakim, now Zedekiah gets that name from Nebuchadnezzar, and that's the name that he's known by. It says in verse 18 that Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign. That means, all right, how long are we after Josiah's death now? Well, we had 3 months of the reign of Jehoahaz, Josiah's son, and then 11 years of Jehoiakim, and three months of Jehoiachin's reign, and then now this happens. So we're looking at 11 and a half years after Josiah's death. How old is Zedekiah here? 21 years old. Well, how old is Jehoiachin that was just removed from the throne? What did it tell us about him? He was 18 years old, which might be a reason why he's referred to, even though he's technically Jehoiachin's uncle, they're only 3 years apart in age. So that would stand a reason why there was a reference there that describes him as Jehoiachin's brother becomes king. I mean, they would have been, their relationship being that close in age, Jehoiachin 18, Zedekiah is 21. They're going to have a relationship that's going to be, in practice, is going to be more on the lines of siblings than it would be uncle and nephew, because they're very close to the same age. But Zedekiah is actually his uncle. He was 21 years old when he began to reign. So that means, how old was Zedekiah when his father died? Well, we're 11 and a half years after. So I mean, roughly 10 years old, maybe 10 years old. That's how old he would have been when his father died. So he did not have, he being the youngest of these sons of Josiah, he had far less of his father's training and influence. Not that this is an excuse, but he had a lot more evil influences around him than the ones before him, than his older brothers. So not that he's excused to do evil at all. I mean, look at Josiah himself, having all those, and we saw the same with Hezekiah previously, but they grew up in families where they there was nothing but evil all around them. But they still sought the Lord and did the Lord's will. We're all responsible for doing that. And so there's no excuse for anyone. We all know that we have a Creator and that we belong to Him, and we need to seek Him and find out His will and do it. Nobody has an excuse to not do that. Of course, the more we have, the more that the Lord blesses us with, and as far as people to show us goodness and righteousness and teach us in that, then that's the better, obviously. Zedekiah had less of that than his brothers did. But it tells us that he was 21 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. So just like Jehoahaz had a three-month reign, and that was followed by an 11-year reign of his brother Jehoiakim, and then Jehoiachin has a three-month reign, now it's going to be followed by an 11-year reign of Zedekiah. So this is a repeat so closely of what we saw with Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim, those two brothers that were under the domination of Necho, the Pharaoh of Egypt. And now we're seeing this repeated with Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. But the length of Zedekiah's reign is going to be exactly the same as his brother Jehoiakim. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. This is not Jeremiah the prophet. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. So this is not identifying him with his immediate predecessor, his nephew, Jehoiachin. But this is going back to showing he's like his brother, the one that was on the throne just 3 months before, that was evil. He did evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that Jehoiakim had done. That's not a statement we would want made about us, is it? We read all about Jehoiakim and his evil, and anyone that's described as being like that guy by the Lord is obviously someone that is under the Lord's wrath. And so that says in verse 20, "For through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah that he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon." So we're really going to hear now in this account of Zedekiah's reign, we're going to be skipping all the way to his ninth year of those 11, to the siege of Jerusalem by the Babylonians. So we're not being given here in this section any details of his reign or the events thereof during those first 9 years until he rebels against Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. What ended up resulting in Jehoiakim's trouble that led to his death, and we know that the Lord had prophesied through Jeremiah that Jehoiakim's body was going to be cast out like a donkey. He was not going to be given a burial. He was going to be cast out, not even in Jerusalem, and his body was just going to be left out to the elements. But it was because of his evil, all the evil that he did. That's what the Lord pronounced as part of his judgment. So he was his life came to a violent end with no burial, no honor. And it was what was the circumstance that provoked Nebuchadnezzar to do that? Well, he rebelled against him. And so what is Zedekiah going to do now? He's going to rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. This is not going to prosper now either. What we are going to have to also do, like we have done in the cases of, particularly with Jehoiakim and a little bit with Jehoiachin, we're not given a lot of detail about, other than a summary of their lives in terms of how long they reigned, how old they were, that they did evil in the sight of the Lord, and then their reigns and their lives coming to an end. That's really about all we're told in 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles about these these ones who reigned after Josiah. Where do we find most of the information as far as any more details about them and events that occurred in their lives or about the kinds of hearts that they had? Where do we find most of the information about these descendants of Josiah that reigned as kings? In the book of Jeremiah. Because who was there through all of these events? Who was the prophet? And we know that Jeremiah was not the only prophet the Lord sent, but who was the most prominent among them? It was Jeremiah. And Jeremiah began his, he was called to be a prophet by the Lord, began his work as the Lord's prophet back during the reign of Josiah. And it continued through all of these years, through the reigns of all of these last kings of Judah, right here through Zedekiah's time, through the time of the siege of Jerusalem and its fall. Jeremiah is going to survive that and continue for some time after that even. Zedekiah will not. He's going to have his life brought to an end after all of this. This is going to be the end of him. How did Josiah's son Jehoahaz, Where did he spend his last days where he died? In Egypt. We don't know how many years it was after he was taken there by Necho, but that's where he spent the rest of his days. Jehoiakim came to that violent end with his body cast out wherever Nebuchadnezzar had it done. And Jehoiachin was the only one that lived, that we're told about, that lived for many years as a captive in Babylon, never came back from there, but he lived many decades after he was taken away. But Zedekiah, his life is going to come to an end after all of this, after the siege is over, he's going to be judged by Nebuchadnezzar. So his decision to rebel against Nebuchadnezzar is one that's going to ultimately cost. The cost is going to be his life and that of his family, and for all of Jerusalem. The temple is going to be destroyed and burned. I mean, there's still some last chances the Lord gives to him and to the people during his time, but they're going to ignore that. So this will bring about the final judgment of God on all of this wickedness that goes back to, particularly to Manasseh's time as king of Judah, but is going to carry on right through these days of Zedekiah. So God's going to judge all of this, and Zedekiah is not going to survive it. So to look at what we see here in chapter 25 as this begins the last chapter of the book of 2 Kings, and 2 Kings chapter 25. So we're into chapter 36 of 2 Chronicles already, and Lord willing, in a little bit, we will want to go there to look at verse 10, where we had left off at that point previously, at where it tells us about Jehoiachin being removed from the throne by Nebuchadnezzar. And so that's where we'll see the Zedekiah's reign and his life described in 2 Chronicles, but that's the last chapter of that book. So we're in the last chapters now of both 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. So we're near the end of this. This is going to complete that entire period of over 500 years of Israel having kings. So this is a very a lengthy period of Israel's history that's about to come to an end. Zedekiah is now the last physical or earthly king that that the children of Israel ever have. So in verse 1, what happens after his rebellion against the king of Babylon? It says, "And it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the tenth month, in the tenth day of the month." So is this a significant day in Israel's history? mean, how many of the events does the Lord tell us, not just a year or a time in that way, but then pinpoints it down to the very day? It doesn't happen that often, but this is one of those cases. So it's the ninth year of Zedekiah's reign, the 10th month, and the 10th day of the month. So he's precisely identifying the beginning of the siege of Jerusalem. This is a huge event, and it's going to, this siege is going to last for a year and a half. Now, the next, in verses 2 and 3, he's going to just as precisely give us the information about when this siege comes to an end, a year and a half later. It'll be in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the 4th month, and the 5th day of the month. So this tells us exactly how long Jerusalem was under siege, but it's a year and a half, plus whatever, a little bit there. But anyway, it's almost exactly a year and a half. Jerusalem is besieged, which ends with the fall of the city. So here Jerusalem is going to be conquered by the Babylonians, and what's going to end up happening to the city? I mean, the walls are going to be destroyed, the houses, the city destroyed and burnt, the temple destroyed, burnt. I mean, all of it is going to be, this is going to be a catastrophic destruction of Jerusalem, including the temple of the Lord that was built by Solomon. It goes back to, of course, when David had the idea for that God approved of and authorized to be done, and David gathered all the materials and got everything ready for its building. And this is the center of the seat of God's authority over Israel from that point all the way here to this point. So this is going to bring about the end of the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, the end of the temple, where there are only going to be a few survivors left. Already going back to when Jehoiachin was taken, that's when the majority of the captives were taken by Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon. There will be this final wave of captives, the first one, as we pointed out, when Nebuchadnezzar first became emperor, going back to 605 BC. He did take of the royal household the kings of Judah, which included Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were taken to become part of the Babylonian court, the king's court there, with their training and the language and customs and everything of the Chaldeans. And they would remain there in that capacity. But as far as the numbers were, the number of the people, the basket of good figs that was taken, Jehoiachin went with them, Ezekiel, and that went at the time when Jehoiachin was taken as captive. So he was part of that. So all that's left is the basket of those rotten figs, very few of them are going to survive to actually make it to Babylon. So almost all of these are going to end up dead by sword, famine, and pestilence. So those are what they're appointed to. That's what's going to happen. So this is why this is going to be, who's going to be left? There's almost going to be no one left in that land of Canaan that God gave to the children of Israel. The temple's gone. All the people are going to be gone. This is a huge historical moment for Israel in the Old Testament. All that's going to be left is that remnant, that basket of good figs that's going to be in captivity for 70 years in Babylon, that the Lord will later bring back, and he's going to start afresh with them. But no more kings, this is going to be a huge, just like the in 1 Samuel chapter 8, beginning there through chapter 11, where we have the transition from the judges to the kings. This is another major, major turning point in the history of Israel in the Old Testament. So the siege of Jerusalem is going to lead to what's left of that. It says there, in the ninth year of Zedekiah's reign, in the 10th month, in the 10th day of the month, this is verse 1 of chapter 25, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his host, against Jerusalem, and pitched against it, and they built forts against it round about. And the city was besieged unto the 11th year of King Zedekiah. And on the ninth day of the fourth month, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no bread for the people of the land. And the city was broken up, and all the men of war fled by night by the way of the gate between two walls, which is by the king's garden. Now the Chaldees were against the city round about, and the king went the way toward the plain. And the army of the Chaldees pursued after the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho, and all his army were scattered from him. So they took the king and brought him to the king of Babylon, to Riblah, and they gave judgment upon him. And they slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, and put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and bound him with fetters of brass, and carried him to Babylon. And then from there, from verse 8 and beyond, we're going to have a lengthy description of what the Babylonians did to Jerusalem after the removal of Zedekiah. This is the end of his reign as it's described there. This is a very gruesome end to his life. And what happens, and this is really to read that description there that we see in verse 7. What is really the last thing that Zedekiah gets to see in his life? He gets to see with his eyes his sons being killed. It says they slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes and put out the eyes of Zedekiah. So for here, they're making the last thing he gets to see, that the last for the rest of his days, when he thinks back on when he could see, they blind him. They blind him right after they kill his sons in front of him. So this is a very severe judgment that's given to him. Now, when we read more about him in the book of Jeremiah and about all this, we're going to have a lot more detail there about things that happened. The Lord sent Jeremiah to Zedekiah, and he was given so many opportunities to listen to the Lord, and the Lord told him what to do, where he could have avoided this. He did not have to have his end come like this and have things to happen in this way. So this is a punishment from God for what Zedekiah chose to do in his own action. So he's being judged for his own deeds here. God is dealing with him according to his own works. But that makes it even more sad when we read about the opportunities he had to do something different that could have had a different end for him, and he refused to do it. He didn't have enough faith in God to obey the Lord's voice and avoid this outcome. So this is what befalls him as a result of his very foolish and wicked decisions. So that's what we have in 2 Kings about Zedekiah. Just to note a couple of things there. So the siege is for a year and a half. They surround the city. And, what's the reasoning behind a siege like this? This is what the Assyrians did to Samaria, as we know. Of course, this is... This is a practice that goes back to ancient times, these kinds of things still go on and down to our present day. What is the thinking, the reasoning, the logic behind the siege? This is what the Assyrians tried to do to Jerusalem when Hezekiah was king, but they didn't make it to the city to lay siege to it. The Lord delivered Hezekiah because he and the people turned to the Lord and sought the Lord and did what he told them to do, and he spared them from the siege and from anything like this, from what happened to Samaria and for what happens now to Jerusalem at this time. But the reasoning behind this is, well, here's an army. If they go, if Nebuchadnezzar came with his army here in Zedekiah's ninth year, and they assault the city, what's going to happen? Who's going to win the battle? Well, we could say, I mean, the Babylonians are stronger. We would expect the Babylonians to win, but that would be up to the Lord. But we would just looking at it as far as the strength of Babylon compared to Judah and Jerusalem, we would certainly be expecting the Babylonians to prevail in a battle there. But what happens in a battle like that? I mean, they've got to go through the work that it takes to breach the walls, and then they've got to go through there, and then they're going to have a battle with the people when they're at their strongest. Is this going to likely cost lives of soldiers of the Babylonians if they come in there and then they immediately attack the city as soon as they arrive? I mean, yeah, there's going to be a big battle and they're going to lose men. They could lose the battle. So with a siege, they come there, surround the city, park there and wait. Because with the city, everybody in there within the walls of the city, and when they surround it, what's going to happen? Well, all the food they've got is whatever is there within the walls. How are they going to, within the walls of a city like that, are they going to be able to, is there enough land in there within the walls of the city to grow crops to feed all the people in there? Sustain themselves? No. They're going to rely on food to be brought in there. Well, the Babylonians are surrounding the city. No food's going to get through them to be able to get in there to the city to continue to provide for the people. So they're going to be in there and the food's going to be running out. So eventually there's going to be famine. There's going to be starvation. And when you have that, then what also takes hold? Disease. So there, famine and pestilence, two of the three big things the Lord said he appointed for the basket of evil figs, is going to go right along with this siege. There's going to be starvation and disease that are going to be running rampant in Jerusalem over the course of this year and a half. I mean, what a miserable situation. I mean, this is going to drag out for a year and a half. Slowly people are going to be starving, and many dying from that and dying from disease. This would be a horrible, horrible thing to go through. Going back to the book of Deuteronomy, when we read chapter 28 with the curses the Lord warned the people of if they didn't obey him, he gives detailed, lengthy descriptions of the siege and what was going to happen in it, and in their starvation, the desperate things they were going to do. Horrible things. The Lord said, this is what's going to happen to you if you forsake me and you don't obey my commandments. The Lord is bringing this curse on them. This is right straight from Deuteronomy 28 and other places in God's word where he told them, here's what I'm going to do if you rebel against me and don't obey me. So God is keeping his word. He's being faithful to his promise to them. Now that they've done all that they have, he's been very long-suffering to delay doing this for as long as he has. But as he did it to the northern kingdom of Israel with that siege of Samaria, and now he does it here to Jerusalem. So he was patient with the northern kingdom for 208 years. He's been very patient with the southern kingdom of Judah that has rebelled against the Lord. And as we also studied last Sunday night, here they got to see all that happened to their sister, and they're even more treacherous, as the Lord described them. They saw all of that, and then they do the same evil and worse, and then ignore all the prophets. So are they worthy of this judgment and this destruction that comes upon them here? They are worthy of it. And so the Lord is faithful to keep his promise to bring upon them what he told them he would if they did what they did. And now it's happening. And so for the ones who survive, the ones who don't die from famine and pestilence and the siege, these survivors that are going to come out and resist the Babylonians, what's left for them? The sword. So this is going to be it. So the city, it was broken up. So now all you have are a bunch of weak, starving, diseased survivors, remnant that's left. So there's no one to be able to serve as any kind of a threat to fight the Babylonians. So was it worth a year and a half of waiting? Yes, for them it was. So they don't have to lose their own lives in a fight. They can wait it out. And a year and a half later, the city falls and they don't have to fight against it and lose their own men. And so it says the city was broken up and all the men of war, they fled. Problem is, of course, the Babylonians surround the city. They try to, and during the night, they try to get away, find a way through a gap somewhere. And Zedekiah found at least a way through a little bit, but there's a mass number of them there, and all they do is chase down anybody that tries to get through. Well, they caught Zedekiah there in the plains of Jericho. So he was heading east. The plains of Jericho, as we know, that's right over there by the Jordan River. Now, to me, that seems like the wrong direction to go in, because that's heading towards where the Babylonians came from. I mean, Babylon is to the east, but anyway, I guess they went wherever they could find a way to go in their desperation. But anyway, they're going east, so the Babylonians, that's in their own direction. But they caught him in the plains of Jericho, so I mean, he made it away from the city a bit, but not very far. His army was scattered from him, and so they took him, and they brought him to the king of Babylon, that's to Nebuchadnezzar. So he's going to go face the one he rebelled against, the one who put him on the throne and gave him his name that he's rebelled against. Now he's going to go face him in person there, it says, in Riblah. Where's that? That's in Syria. So this is where Nebuchadnezzar has made this a headquarters for whatever campaign he's on here. Likely involved more than just what he was doing with the siege of Jerusalem, but he has a headquarters there in this Syrian city of Riblah. Well, have we heard of this place before? Yeah, we have. In the previous chapter, what happened at the end of chapter 23 and verses 33 and 34 of 2 Kings? This is where when Jehoahaz was made king after Josiah's death, Pharaoh Necho put him in bands at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and put the land a tribute of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. So that's where he took Jehoahaz. So that's where Necho went. So this is a prominent location in the land of Syria. It's kind of at a crossroads where a lot of these big events are taking place right now, where you had Egypt and Assyria trying to resist Babylon, and that didn't work. And Babylon prevailed against them ultimately at Carchemish. But now this is the same location where Nebuchadnezzar has his headquarters. So that's where Necho was when he was going to join with the Assyrians against Babylon. That's the location where he had Jehoahaz taken and then sent to Egypt. So it's kind of interesting to see some of these patterns being repeated by the Lord here. But this is the very same location where now Zedekiah is brought. So where his own brother was taken by Necho, now he's before Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. So that's where he was brought and where they gave judgment upon him. He was judged for his rebellion against the king. Nebuchadnezzar put him there, gave him his name, and he was to do the bidding of Nebuchadnezzar. So when he now refuses to do that, Nebuchadnezzar comes and besieges the city. It falls, and now he takes him, and now he's going to judge him for rebelling against him. And whose judgment is this going to be? God's. Now, Nebuchadnezzar's judging him for rebelling against him personally, against Nebuchadnezzar, the man. But this is God's judgment through Nebuchadnezzar. Who's the one, through Jeremiah the prophet, that told Zedekiah not to rebel against Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon? We'll see that Jeremiah spoke the word of God to Zedekiah and all the people not to resist. There should not have been a siege. He told them, when they come, give yourselves up to them, and then you won't have all of this happen. But if you resist, you're going to die by the sword, famine, and pestilence. And that's what they chose, and that's what they got. They didn't believe any of it, but they're going to come to learn that what they didn't believe was true, and it's going to be too late. So Lord willing, next week, we want to look at a little bit of that in 2 Chronicles 36, particularly verses 10 through 13. Not much there. It'll be even less, but the same basic information that we saw there in 2 Kings 24 this morning. But then we want to really look into some of the passages in the book of Jeremiah that tell us much more about these events during the reign of Zedekiah and the fall of Jerusalem. And it's going to tie into things that happened to Jeremiah personally. But so Lord willing, we want to do that, and that's what's in store next Lord's Day, the Lord willing. But let's go to our Heavenly Father in prayer now as we close.